through the worst of times, through Nixon and through Bush. Do you remember 36? We went our separate ways. You fought for Stalin, I fought for freedom. You believe in authority, I believe in myself. I'm a Molotov cocktail, you're down pairing your baby. What's that confused look in your eyes? What I'm trying to say is that I burned down buildings while you sit on a shelf.
You are listening to The Circle Day Show on Resonance 104.4 FM. On tonight's show is Scott Crowe, an anarchist, activist, international speaker, author, educator, strategist, filmmaker, and musician. For over two decades, he has focused on diverse socio-political issues and the exploration of creating and exercising counter-power to capitalism, power, and unsustainable civilization. Crowe is a co-founder of Common Ground Collective, also known as Common Ground Relief, an anarchist organization formed in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. His book, Black Flags and Windmills, Hope, Anarchy and the Common Ground Collective, details those efforts. Good to have you on the show, Scott.
Thank you so much for having me on. And be so nice to a Texan.
Ah, yes, you're one of the ones we like. Question one, what led you to become an anarchist? And tell us a little bit about your background, please.
Well, I think that everything in our lives brings us to this moment. There's no particular incident that usually happens. It's a summation of things, our cultural background, social, political, and where we grow up. And so for me, I think it was just a long journey, like all of us, you know, of awakening at different stages of just figuring things out. Prisons factored into my life a lot when I was a kid. You know, people around me, my uncles, my cousins, my father, were all went to prison, and I think that just seeing the world and trying to make sense of it, but not having any explanation of it, and then being introduced to the ideas of anarchy as a teenager, even though I didn't become an anarchist then or even subscribe to those ideas, but just being introduced to those ideas and political ideas helped me to give language to what was going on or the way I was perceiving the world.
Hmm. And what is it about the ideology of anarchism that is so appealing to you? And why do you think there is such hostility about it in the general mindset of people?
Well, to the second part, I think it's lack of understanding about it or communication of it. You know, the ideas of anarchy have been totally distorted in corporate media for the last 100 years because anarchy equals chaos. And that was the way it's presented. Only if it was something was being torn down and not thought about, that was anarchy. That's not what anarchy is at all. And actually, for me, I don't want to split hairs, but I really am much more a proponent of the ideas of anarchy and not the ideas of anarchism. Anarchism seems like it becomes too rigid, like an ideology. But the ideas of anarchy, to me, are these living and dynamic, beautiful set of ideas where there's no party program, there's no platform, there's no correct, quote unquote, correct way to do it. It's the fact that we want liberation, that I want liberation, that you want liberation, that all of us want liberation on our own terms, outside of governments, outside of multinational corporations, and I would even argue outside of the rules of engagement of activism.
And the elections are coming up next year in the United States. How exciting.
No, are
it's
they?
Not exciting, I'm joking.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I swear they are. As an anarchist,
you're talking about pomp and circumstance, right? The part, you know, it's just a big parade for the next year, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. The biggest
idiots. And then people pull levers at the end. Is that what happens at the end of the parade?
Yes, the big puppet show. Love it. So I suppose as an anarchist, what do you make of this charade?
I don't, you know, it's irrelevant. I understand that people's lives are absolutely impacted by real decisions that are made, especially around those who are traditionally marginalized or historically neglected, right? People who, poor people, working people, migrants, marginalized communities. But really, largely that stuff is irrelevant because not those people, but the electoral politics that happen around all the changes that may or may not happen are largely irrelevant because it's really... It's like arranging chairs on the deck of the Titanic, where it's like whether you put them here or you put them there, the Titanic is still going down. And so I don't focus on it. What I focus on and what I want people to really focus on is cultural shift, thinking differently about how we engage in the world that we want to create and the worlds we want to believe in and the worlds that we want to be a part of. And to me, that it, when we start looking at the pomp and circumstance that goes on around elections, we begin to lose sight of that, which I think is actually detracts from the actual thinking about what we should be doing or could be doing instead of what we think we should be doing, which is voting for people or trying to support candidates because they're the lesser of two evils.
So maybe it's a chance to promote an alternative, because you can kind of show this for what it is. It's, I suppose, it's a showcase of extremists, you know, like so you can maybe we can promote a complete alternative of ground roots organizing outside of this.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, and I think that it opens that. But I think that really what I would love for communities to do and us as individuals is to not even focus on it, just ignore it and just continue to do the things that we're doing. You know, whatever it is, if you're building community centers and clinics or if you're resisting oppression and exploitation in the streets, I think that just continuing with that and not letting this other stuff distract us will help us to get closer to those liberatory goals.
Yes. And I always say that just because a politician may have your interest at heart and they may tick your boxes in some ways, there's going to be a sacrifice to be made in other ways. I always think
no,
that.
For sure. And think about this. Anybody who is trying to be a first world leader, quote unquote, first in world, you know, there's a lot of screwing that's going on of communities and people along the way to get to that. And if that person, even if they were amazing, if they were to get that job, they're never going to do it because the rest of the systems are never going to let that take place. Never going to let that take place. Sure, they may make a couple of adjustments on your pet project or your pet issue or things like that, but they're never, ever going to be able to make systemic change. And these systems cannot be reformed. Capitalism cannot be reformed. Electoral politics cannot be reformed. These systems have to be dismantled. We have to begin to create alternatives. And that's not always going to be beautiful, but we need to take those risks to do that, in my opinion.
It's not always going to be easy, that's for sure.
That's for sure.
What's been your experience of state of repression in your years of organizing? That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, partly, I think just being involved in systemic social change makes you a target in general. That doesn't mean that you're going to have the FBI kick your door in or any of that stuff. But in my own case, I won the lottery, especially after September 11th, 2001 in the United States, of being in the top three of four categories that were targeted for as alleged domestic terrorists. Of course, the number one community is Muslims and people of Middle Eastern descent. Yeah. In the terrorism cases internationally and in the U.S., they make up 95-98% of those cases. And then the rest of the, in the United States, specifically, and I think also in the UK, you have that too, where there's also the second groups, and that would be animal rights activists, radical animal rights and radical environmentalists, and then anarchists, political activists in general, but anarchists in particular, because these three groups were willing to engage in property destruction as part of change, as systemic change, or to shut down corporations or governments who are doing the wrong thing. And so they were willing to use those tactics. And so that, so in my case, I just happened to be in three of the four categories. I wasn't a Muslim. And I want to make sure that people understand, too, that Muslims have taken the brunt of this. Those communities, way more than any activist communities or anarchist communities or political communities, Muslims are making up so much of the cases. And even when they're being targeted for surveillance or prison time, their sentences are longer. Their surveillance is deeper than any activist that we know. I think it's important, so in my case, beginning in about 1999, I was under investigation for alleged domestic terrorism by the FBI and the Joint Terrorism Task Force, and that went on for about 10 years, and that was in, I think it was in 9 states and 13 field offices. They tried to indict me 3 times. In the U.S., you have to make an indictment for felony cases, so they tried to indict me, and the three big things that they tried to get me for was, one, stockpiling weapons, which I was not doing, two, being a nexus of terrorism, which means that I was taking international funds and bringing them to the U.S. and then funding terrorism in the United States. And then three was to was all these unsolved arsons across the United States that were related, that were politically motivated. And so So that's what they tried to put me in prison for. But after 10 years of investigation, multiple fields, spending a lot of money, six informants in my life, two of them who tried to get me to commit crimes that would have put me in prison for 40 years, I still walked away from it, and they looked stupid, the FBI. But because in my case was really lucky, one, because I didn't go to prison, but two, it was unusual in that usually by the time they've spent that amount of resources, they want a conviction, and they couldn't get the conviction. And so I was able to still walk and I was still free from it. And so I was able to do an open records request called a Freedom of Information Act request and get the documents through this organization and then to find out what they had done. And so that's how I found out all this information, that they were going through my trash, that they had tried to get the Internal Revenue Service to go after my finances, that they had tried to they tried to get people to inform on me and be able to commit these crimes. That all of these things came out, and afterwards, after it was actually pretty much supposedly quote unquote done.
So it's been quite heavy, actually.
Right.
And in terms of theory, who have been the writers that have inspired you, and why? Of anarchist theory.
Oh, anarchist theory in particular. The thing is, I draw from a lot of different disciplines. But I think in anarchist ideas, there's been so many. It's hard to even think about particular ones. Murray Bookchin's book about the Spanish anarchists was one of the most was a book that really, really resonated with me a lot. So did, and this one by Sam Dolgoff that came off about the Spanish anarchist collectives also, that actually talked about how they ran these different collectives, were both very influential books to me. Colin Ward's book, Anarchy in Action, was one of the first anarchist books I ever got that it really made sense to me. And contemporary stuff, I'm drawing from insurrectionary tendencies, for the last 20 years, primitivist and anti-civilization stuff. There's no particular quote-unquote writer that I'm just like, this is the person I think I should read, but as much as just the tendencies and the things that come out of it, because there's a lot of anonymous writers and there's a lot of unknown writers that I think have written really, really good things. Mm. There's books that I recommend to people a lot, but they're not necessarily the deepest anarchist books at all, but just books that are accessible, like Cindy Milstein's book, The Promises and Aspirations of Anarchism, is a good book. Peter Gelderloo's book, Anarchy Works, is a great book. These are just some examples. And again, these aren't the deepest theories, but I just like them. Mm. And I think that they're good references.
And how about any practitioners of anarchy that has inspired you?
That list is long.
Give me two. If you can.
Well, one of them will be controversial because many anarchists won't claim them, but what the Zapatistas have engaged in has been super inspirational. The Spanish anarchists, of course, have super inspirational movements.
Yes.
As far as people, of course, there's like Emma Goldman and Lucy Parsons and people like Lucy Parsons was actually from Texas, so we have
yes,
connections there.
Right.
But there's all kinds of people that have inspired me in different ways. There's a professor and writer in the United States named John P. Clark, and he follows a lot of Buddhist traditions, but he has been writing about anarchism since the early 70s, and his writing is pretty influential to me. Mm. I just like the way his approach to it, because he's somebody who's been around for a long time and it's not bitter and or resentful or sad about things. He actually has a lot of joy and hope still, and he's in his 70s now. Mm. I think that there's, just right off the top of my head, I can't think of any other people, but there's a mountain of them,
yes. Durruti is one of mine.
Yeah.
He was all about action as well.
For sure.
But actually, a little plug, because on the Circle Day, on the Facebook page and the Twitter, we do what I do, the anarchists of the day. So, if you go on the Facebook, you'll see like an array of anarchists, dead and alive, women, men, who have inspired, who've written books and who have just like acted upon the theory. So just have a look and see that this theory is not as mad as it was made out to be.
Right. But as far as like, the to a question you had said earlier about acceptance or not, or the ideas. I think that people accept the ideas, but anarchy is just a political reference for things that many people engage in without naming it at all.
You're right.
Anytime that we engage in cooperation or mutual aid or we engage in direct action, which is not waiting on others to take action, I think are forms of anarchism. And I think in before European traditions, there was indigenous traditions that had tons of things. They just didn't name it as anarchy. And you know, my goal is not to convert people or to bring them to ideas of anarchy, but just to share liberatory ideas and let people do with them what they will or not, you know? And so I think when we pose it in this framing of like, it's only anarchy, I think we run into more resistance. Whereas just like, when you do that and they go like, oh, that's it. And I'm like, well, we call that anarchy. And people are like, oh yeah, that's interesting. Like my mom, I mean, that's why, you know, she's not an anarchist, but she's an anarchist at heart.
Essentially, it's egalitarianism, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, anti-hierarchical.
Exactly.
Really.
Right.
How hard is that to kind of accept and
right.
be happy with, you
collective
know?
Liberation.
Yeah, corporations are into their own egalitarianism, as in like, you know, like they organize amongst each other,
right,
against us.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Okay, so what are some of the obstacles of organizing, and what have you learnt that you need to do to overcome, you know, the obstacles, some of the obstacles?
Well, I think as political and social movements, and I use movements in a quote unquote broad terms, is that we need to reevaluate activism and the ideas around activism and the way that we engage, because activism has become very much part and parcel of the systems. It's the pressure valve. I'm not the first person to ever say this or the first person to think this. I mean, people have been thinking this since the 60s, but I definitely think that we're on this treadmill that we need to get off of if we really want to push revolutionary ideas. The second thing is stop framing things for activists to stop framing things as like, I'm awake and I've got this special information and I have moral authority, more knowing more than you. I think that that's not a good approach, not because it's not welcoming, because it's wrong. It's arrogance. And that bothers me. And I've been there. It's me, you know, like, and I think that approaching it more like the Zapatistas, which is to lead by obeying, to lead by asking, to ask questions along the way, to walk and ask, are much, much more healthy approaches to this. And then the third piece, I think this is the biggest one, is that we need to move as political movements and social movements to move from a politics of opposition and rejection to a politics of and engagements of possibilities. And that's not semantics. We need to stop being the fire brigades to put everything out and try to stop this issue and that issue and that issue and that issue, and begin to think about what is the world that we would imagine for ourselves? What's the world that we imagine for those around us? And how do we begin to make steps to get towards those worlds, knowing that we don't have the answers and it's okay?
Yes. You're one of the headliners at the Anarchist Book Fair happening this.
I don't know how that happened.
Well, magic happens.
Yeah, magic happens.
Phone calls are made. And we're very honored to have you here. Actually.
I'm very excited. Very, very excited.
And it's happening this Saturday, the 24th of October. What can we expect from your talk, if you will?
DJs, laser lights, smoke machines, a lot of dancing, and me talking. I'll talk a lot about creating power from below. I'm going to mix a little bit of surveillance, talking about some of the issues that we've talked about, some of the politics and social engagements. I'll talk about the Common Ground Collective in more details and about why that situation, I think, is illustrative of the way that we might want to begin to think about engaging and stuff. And then I'll tell a bit of personal history in more detail about how I came to these ideas, because I think that all of us are always revealing things. We're always opening new moments. And so I want to open that moment. I want people to come along and let's open the moment together so that they can see themselves. Not that they would see myself or you or anybody else as heroes or sheroes, but that we begin to see ourselves in these stories and that we can move on forward from that.
Is
that enough?
No.
Is that good? Yeah. It's like, and the DJs are going to be there. The lasers are going to be there. It's going to be awesome.
I hope so. And last question, we've got 5 minutes to cover this question, if you like. And we've got a new book out called Emergency Hearts, Molotov's Dreams. Tell us about it and any other projects you have on the way.
Okay. Please. So that book is it's a collection of interviews. I've been interviewed quite a bit in the last few years. I'm very fortunate in that way to be interviewed. And I was approached by GTK Press, this Guide to Culture Press out of Cleveland, Ohio in the United States, about doing a book around the interviews. And so what I did was I actually took a sampling of some of the interviews, written interviews, audio interviews and stuff, transcribed them, and then I remixed them. So I picked different themes. So each of the interviews is a different theme, like one's on police brutality in prisons, one's on corporate media and social media, one's on animal liberation. And then I didn't just put them in there straight. I remixed them and actually kind of cut them up, kind of like William Burroughs or Brian Geisen style. And so I expanded on the ideas. And so if in an interview I was asked a question, I just gave a short answer. I wrote more about that answer. What did I mean by that? And this book is kind of a transitional book between Black Flags and then other book projects that I'm working on. I don't actually consider myself an activist these days. I'm still engaged in things, but mostly I've been writing a lot more. And so I have a series of books coming out, one from AK Press next year, which will be about living under surveillance and tools and tactics of fighting back against surveillance. I have another book that I'm working on about the practices and reflections on community armed self-defense and how it's been used by communities around the world, mostly in the 20th and 21st centuries. It's not a call to arms. It's not about armed insurrection. But it's really about like how groups like the Black Panther Party or the Zapatistas or the Spanish anarchists and contemporary groups have used community armed self-defense to defend themselves from being killed, but also as part of building larger programs like food programs and clinics and things like that as part of building, as exercising power from below. And then I have another book in the works called Insurgent Utopias, which is touches on some of the ideas that we've talked about tonight, which is that how do we begin to ask different questions about how we engage in political and social struggles, and then what is it that we can do that's beyond activism or that's different than activism, even if we don't know the answers. And so that's explored in Insurgent Utopia. So all three of these books will be out in the next year or year and a half.
And you're actually on a talking tour, aren't you, around the UK?
I am, actually. Yeah, it's like 12 to 11 events. I'm here until the 29th, so I'll be in Bristol and Leeds and Manchester and Lowbrow University, Glasgow, Edinburgh. I'm doing a lot of dates, so come out if you're in those regions, because I'd like to meet people. I like to see the projects that are going on, but we can also share ideas about stuff. I can bring stuff from across the pond and learn from y'all.
Do we know where people can go to find out the?
You can find out at my website, scottcrow.org, scottcrow, crow like the bird, not like the actor, .org, O-R-G. You can find it.
On there will be a list of
the list of events. You can also look at pmpress.org, P as in Paul, Mary, Press, .org. They have that on there. And I'm here from today, which is the 21st until the 29th on a whirlwind tour of England and Scotland and very excited about seeing people and meeting people and finding out what they're doing.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you for doing this radio program and for having me on again. I love it.
Yeah, you've been on twice.
I love that. Thank you.
Maybe there'll be a third time soon.
I hope so.
You've been listening to The Circle Day Show on Resonance 104.4 FM. Thank you to my lovely guests and new friend, Scott Crow. A reminder to make sure you come to the London Anarchist Book Fair, please, this Saturday, the 24th of October, 10 a.m. till 7 p.m. at Central St. Martin's Uni in King's Cross. We call it our Anarchist Christmas. Lots of stalls, lots of talks, and there is even a creche, and it's free entry. What more can you ask for? Find out more on the website anarchistbookfair.org.uk. Till next week, turn on, tune in, and kick off. The best of times, through the worst of times, through Nixon and through Bush. Do you remember 36? We went our separate ways. You fought for Stalin, I fought for freedom. You believe in authority, I believe in myself. I'm a Molotov.
tough cocktail, you're dumping your baby. What's that confused look in your eyes? What I'm trying to say is that I burn down buildings while you sit on a shelf inside of them. You call the cops on the looters and pie throwers. They call it class war. I call it co-conspirators. 'Cause baby, I'm an anarchist, you're a spineless liberal. We marched together for the 8-hour days and held hands in the streets of Seattle. But when it came time to throw bricks through that Starbucks window, you left me all alone, all alone. In awe at the red, white, and blue on the 4th of July. While those fireworks were exploding, I was burning, that swinging my black flag high, eating the peanuts that the parties have tossed you. In the backseat of your father's new Ford, you believe in the ballot, you believe in reform. You have faith in the elephant and jackass. And to you, solidarity's a four-letter word. We're all hypocrites, but you're a patriot. You thought I was only joking when I screamed kill Whitey at the top of my lungs, at the cops in their cars and the men in their suits. No, I won't take your hand and marry the state. 'Cause baby, I'm an anarchist, you're a spineless liberal. We marched together for the 8-hour days and held hands in the streets of Seattle. But when it came time to